I'm honored to be here with an amazing guest speaker that I'm sitting right next to here, and that is William Branham. With 26 years of Navy SEAL experience, a sniper instructor, what does the best mean to you?
I don't think I even really understood what that meant back then, because again, I was poor. I did not have good grades. I'm not a great athlete. You know, I can shoot just fine. And so I was always the guy that was picked last. And so I wanted to be more in control of my destiny. But really what I learned much later on in life, and I think probably even more when I got out of the SEAL teams, was we're really only as good. And I think Jim Rohn actually wrote this, said, we are the sum of the five people that we surround ourselves with. When I retired from the SEAL teams, I felt like I lost my purpose and my mission and my team. And so one of the things I had to learn is I had to go out and find the people that I wanted in my life. I had to figure out what I wanted to do. What I found is when we're by ourselves, we suck. We have to surround ourselves with people who are going to help make us better. I have to hire people to make me better and then use those skills that they taught me and incorporate those into the big picture, into what I'm actually doing. Many of those people that I surround myself with to help make me better, to help make me the best at what I do, they're really good at certain pieces. So I go and get information from them. I get information from them. I get information from you. And I apply that to my life and my business and the things that I'm doing so that I can be the best at what I do.
If you were to give that one key of advice to the kings and queens listening that will give them that opportunity of building their empire, what is that key?
Welcome to the Queendom.
And we are here with Keys to the Queendom live in LA, California, my queens and kings. I'm honored to be here with an amazing guest speaker that I'm sitting right next to here in a beautiful studio. And that is William Branham, Navy SEAL with 26 years of Navy SEAL experience. You've served for 26 years and you've cultivated a powerful mindset. His experience, extensive training, his experience as well, high pressure situations, a sniper instructor, and leading teams on operations ranging from protecting the interim in Iraq and elected to direct action missions in Baghdad and Afghanistan. With his extensive experience, William is here to share the lessons he learned, and that's going to also help you guys out there to create and develop a mindset of success. William, hello. My mate.
Thanks for having me on here. I'm not sure what bio you just read, but that sounds like a pretty cool person.
He's amazing.
I'd like to meet him.
And I just want to add, before we met, I think I sent you a voice note and I was like, it'd be kind of cool if we did some training session. I semi-regret that now.
Something like you want to go, yeah, we can go roll around on the beach later. And I can put you through a little Navy SEAL workout.
I definitely want to share with the audience, your story with the Navy SEAL. Before we do, I just want to break the ice. Fucking, you are amazing. And I know swearing here is allowed. I haven't sworn much today, so I wanted to just break that.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Get some. Let's do it.
I'd love to hear more about your journey, your pinnacle moments as a Navy SEAL, what got you to become one, and how you became a leader.
Wow. That's a big question.
It's a bit of a three-part, sorry.
Right. So
How did you begin?
How did I begin? Mm. God created the heavens and the earth. I'm kidding.
My mom and dad,
they met and some other stuff happened. So I grew up in a little town in Mississippi. It's backwoods. There's not a lot that goes on in Mississippi. And, I was very poor, dirt poor. That was called poor white trash as a kid. I wasn't a popular kid. I was not a smart kid. I later found out that I have ADHD, which I thought I was just dumb, but I was still did all the, I was always in the AP classes, advanced placement classes, but really the real answer of why I was in those classes is because that's where all the pretty girls were. I'm a man with an agenda, apparently.
<You're> smart.
I did well enough in those classes, but, I was heavily involved in the Boy Scouts. I liked hunting and fishing and being outdoors and things like that. And, we only had three channels when I was growing up. And so my heroes growing up were G.I. Joe, John Rambo, Knight Rider, David Hasselhoff. I forgot all about that until right now. We're in LA, Hollywood's right up the road.
Well, the weirdness is coming out of
right. And John Wayne. Yeah. I grew up watching Westerns and things like that. And John Wayne was in a movie called Green Beret in Vietnam. John Rambo was an Army Ranger. So I always knew that I wanted to be part of some small elite military organization. I always knew I didn't want to be part of like the big army, big green machine, like all these people moving parts. I'm like, that's too much chaos for me. I want to be more surgical. I always liked the idea of being a sniper because I liked hunting and sneaking around and things like that. And so I was at this Boy Scout Jamboree. It's a worldwide Boy Scout event that happens in, it was in this army base in Virginia. And the kind of the sister troop that went with us, there was a kid there. He was a really good swimmer. And he said, my plan when I graduate high school is I want to go to the Naval Academy, become an officer. I want to fly F-14 Tomcats like the movie Top Gun. And I want to become a Navy SEAL. I'm like, I want to do all of that. What is a Navy SEAL? And so he explained it's the hardest military training in the world, the most elite, you know, soldiers, what have you. And they jump out of airplanes, blow things up, shoot guns, scuba dive. And I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to do that. Like, where do I sign? And, but I didn't really know how to get there. Again, poor, no, there was no internets back then. Al Gore hadn't invented them yet. I went and did that Boy Scout Jamboree. I came back and this was the summer between my 11th and 12th grade of high school. The Navy recruiter called my house and said, hey, have you ever thought about joining the Navy? Now, had I not met this kid, I would have said, no way, I'm not interested. There's no chance because every other man in my family has joined the Navy. Reasons to not join the Navy. They have the ugliest uniforms known to man. They've gotten better, but they still, at the time, ugliest known to man. They ride on these big gray things that float out there in the ocean. I don't want anything to do with any of that. I want to shoot guns and blow things up and do things, you know, along those lines. So I said, well, I want to go to the Naval Academy. I want to fly F-14 Tomcats and I want to be a Navy SEAL. He's like, awesome. Come on down here. I watched a really cheesy video on, you know, recruiting video on the Navy SEALs. Again, this was early 90s.
Like a really right. old school.
Yeah, very pixelated. Like if you saw it today, you'd be like, what is that? Who would ever sign up for that program? But I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. Where do I sign? And how do I go to the Naval Academy and fly F-14 Tomcats? He was like, all right, hold on. So I joined the Navy while I was still in high school. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to boot camp until I graduated high school. Like 2 weeks after I graduated, went off to boot camp, did my time, eventually made my way to the SEAL teams and the rest is history. But the reason I went in is because a lot of people think that I wanted to get out of that little small town.
Yeah,
I was very comfortable in that little small town. Yeah. Like I had a girlfriend, I had friends, I knew all the people, I knew what was expected. And that leaving and going to boot camp was the first time I was like, oh, I'm very uncomfortable right now. Like I don't like you're what they do is they remove all of your identity. You know, they shave your head, which apparently that's how I roll now.
I like
the beard. They don't let you have a beard, but that's, you know, that's that was after the fact. They take your identity away and they help you assimilate into the military culture. They teach you how to be in the military, you know, military bearing, discipline, all those other things. And then I ended up on one of those big gray floaty things for a little while on my way to becoming a Navy SEAL. I made some tactical errors. I ended up on one of those big gray ships. The first opportunity I got to get off and go to become a Navy SEAL, I took it. I did a very unconventional approach to get there. But I got there and then I eventually graduated. And then, you know, I got to the SEAL teams. I taught sniper school. I was actually teaching sniper school when 9/11 happened. And, you know, we'll talk more tomorrow and I'll kind of talk a little bit more about that. But, And I was the senior instructor, not the senior guy. But I was a senior instructor, and this is like sort of my first round of real leadership.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had guys that were senior to me asking me, what are we going to do? And I was like, I have no idea. Hold on. And so, again, I'll share that with you later. But if you want to hear the rest of the story, maybe if you guys have an opportunity for me to come down and speak at an event in Australia, potentially we can make something happen. I can explain a little bit more.
I want to bring this up because you said there were three generations of Navy SEAL in your family. Was that right?
Just Navy people.
Navy people.
They float. Yeah. You know, my grandfather was, He was in World War II.
Yeah.
I have a picture of the ship that he was on, and there are these little stamps. And, you know, they were fighting the Japanese at the time. And he was like, you know, he told me lots of stories. But he's like, see all those little airplanes that are crashing in? Those are the kamikazes that I shot down. He's like, I actually shot down more, but those are the ones they gave me credit for, because there was lots of people shooting.
Yeah.
My dad was in the Navy. He was a construction guy in the Navy. Uncles were in the Navy. Everyone was in the Navy. So I was like, I'm not going to be in the Navy, because everyone else has done that. I want to be different.
Yeah.
I joined the Navy.
And I just want to bring that up because Navy SEAL, there's, as you said, it's the elite of the elite, because I feel like I've heard in a podcast that you've said you wanted to be the best.
Yes.
So run me through that, because it's, you know what, actually, let me go back to that, because my dad was actually in the military in Germany. So a little bit of a backstory, and I am bringing this up because there was military discipline that I had my whole life watching him. And there was an element where he used to say to me, you know, if you're not at the front, you're a failure. So that's obviously something I've worked on. And the fact that you've said you wanted to be the best was the reason why you joined the Navy SEAL. So what does that look like? What does the best mean to you?
I don't think I even really understood what that meant back then, because again, I was poor.
Yeah.
I did not have good grades. I'm not a great athlete.
Really?
I am not a great athlete. I do not, like, you know, I can shoot just fine.
Yeah.
But I'm not good with, you know, football, baseball, basketball. I'm not good at any of those sports. I'm okay at, you know, fighting, because I went and learned that on my own.
Yeah.
But, like as an athlete, as the way we generally think about athletes, I was okay at running, but I wasn't good at any of it. I actually was terrible at all of it. And so I was always the guy that was picked last.
Mm.
And so I wanted to be more in control of my destiny. But really what I learned much later on in life, and I think probably even more when I got out of the SEAL teams, was we're really only as good. And I think Jim Rohn actually said this, that we're, you know, we are the sum of the five people that we surround ourselves with.
Yeah.
And when I retired from the SEAL teams, I don't think I'll ever retire, so I'll just use air quotes there for retired. I felt like I lost my purpose and my mission and my team really overnight. I had a badass purpose, a badass mission, and a fucking badass team. I knew what I was going to do every day when I woke up. I knew what I was going to do every night when I went to sleep. And then one day it was all gone. It was like that Avengers movie. I don't know if you've seen it, where Thanos like snaps his fingers and half the world's population goes away.
I'm a massive, like, Marvel fan. Just look,
it's all gone. You're like, what the fuck happened? What do I do? Where do I go? How do I do it? And so one of the things I had to learn is I had to go out and find the people that I wanted in my life. I had to figure out what I wanted to do. And, you know, what I found is when we're by ourselves, we suck. We have to surround ourselves with people who are going to help make us better.
Yeah.
We have to do the work, but we have to find the people that are going to help raise us. And a lot of times that was hiring people to help me get where I needed to go. Go hire a coach. Mm-hmm. That was a very novel concept in the beginning, because I was like, well, I can just figure it out. I mean, men were probably the worst in, like, we not wanting to ask for help. But I did eventually hire a coach, and I hired another coach. I have several coaches, and I coach a lot of people myself now. And I didn't really think about it until one of my coaches said, hey, can you do a video testimonial for me? And I was like, oh, sure. I don't really know what to say, but okay, let me think about it. And so what I did is I thought back on my time in the SEAL teams, and I realized that, you know, we're the best at what we do. There's no one better at the mission. But inside of that mission, there's lots of little things that you have to do. You have to be really good at lots of things to be really good at this big thing. So I'll just use close quarters combat. So we go in, we take over buildings and things like that, go find bad guys. Part of that is shooting. We're the best at that close quarters combat mission. We're not the best shots in the world. We're very good at shooting, but there are other people in the world that are better than us. because we're so focused on so many other things. There are people in the world that are the best shots in the world. They go from this to, you know, their secondary and back and forth. And, you know, they can shoot faster than we can. They can acquire the target. They can change guns. They can do all those things much faster than we can.
Yeah.
So what we did is we would hire them to teach us how to be better, how to be faster, how to give us the advantage in the on the battlefield when we're in that. So we might, you know, go do that training and I might be 20% better than when I started. Awesome. I'm not going to say 20% better because I have so many other things that I have to focus on. I might by the time we deploy, I might only be 5% better than what my previous baseline was, but I only need to be 1% faster or better than the guy that I'm my opponent. That's all I need. But I'm not going to get there if I try to do it on my own. Mm. I have to go out. I have to hire people to make me better and then use those skills that they taught me and incorporate those into the big picture, into what I'm actually doing. So those many of those people that I surround myself with to help make me better, to help make me the best at what I do, they're really good at certain pieces. So I go and get information from them. I get information from them. I get information from you. And I apply that to my life and my business and the things that I'm doing so that I can be the best at what I do. I'm not trying to be the best at what you do. I'm trying to be the best at what I do.
Yes. That really resonates just because everything that you've said is when you're wanting to get better at something, it's a matter of knowing what to execute, what you need to learn, and hiring the people that are in their expert field so that you can be that 1% better, but also for you to be the best version for yourself.
Correct.
Obviously, discipline's been throughout your whole life based on what you've said. Give me a rundown and we'll go through also what happened after the Navy SEAL because I think that there's a lot of stuff that we can uncover there. What's the training like for the Navy SEAL? What is the Navy SEAL for people who don't know what it's like?
Queen, how often have you said, I spent my whole life studying, I've been to school my whole life, and I've actually learned nothing that teaches me the tools and strategies to build a successful business in the outside world? You've probably spent thousands of dollars on courses, or you've heard fake news from business gurus. Well, I'm here to give this incredible news to everyone here right now that this is Queen Stream University. Get out of debt and actually start making money in the online space, knowing and having the foundations to build a successful business. Now I'm talking because I have gone through the trenches. I have been a fitness coach, built my online business as a pro athlete, and now I am a business coach. You'll go from having absolutely no idea what your business is through in the 8 weeks, learn the foundations of knowing what your purpose is, your vision and mission, and also understanding your business values with the execution to know what that business is. You'll also learn branding, social media, content strategy, marketing, and more importantly, how to sell. With Queen Stream University, it'll cut out the bullshit and remove all the fluff and get you working specifically on your business so you can execute this in 8 weeks to get ready to launch. I wanted you to have something where you get to access something straight away, where you get to fast track your growth, as well as remove any doubt, any overwhelming sensation or stress, or the question that everyone seems to ask, where do I begin? With Queen Stream University, you'll be able to build wealth, freedom, and at the end of the day, be an entrepreneur and be able to say, I have finally built my own thing, my own business. And I've stopped making money for someone else, and I'm now making money for my own empire. Queen Stream University.
Before we go there, there was something that was in my mind and it jumped out. Maybe it'll jump back in really quickly.
Tell me. Was that my fault?
No, it was, I should have kept talking. I stopped and I was like, wait, I remember this thing that I want to say. Give me a second. It will come back to me. Start talking and then I'll interrupt discipline? You. I'm going to interrupt you and then I'm going to come back.
Yeah, I think as well.
I know what it was.
What?
It was it had something to do with hiring a coach, being the best version of yourself.
For you, yeah, and having an expert in your field.
I don't remember. I'll remember it later. We can come back to it.
Definitely come back, I promise. I do this all the time. Don't even stress. But yeah, it's training for the Navy SEAL. What was that like?
So SEAL training, but when I went into it, I was like, how hard can it be?
Yeah. So your mindset was kind of like,
I'm like, it can't be that hard. I mean, I know everyone quits, but I don't quit. I'm not a quitter. I'm not good at a lot of stuff, but I'm good at like being at grinding. Mm. I'm good at sticking to something until I finish it. And, you know, that was sort of my mindset going into SEAL training. I didn't really train prior to that. I should have. Life would have been much better, much easier had I not, but I don't do things the easy way. I do things apparently the hard way. So I went in, I learned that I hate running on soft sand. And I'm not good at it. So I had to learn how to run on soft sand while I was there. I got injured 3 times while I was in training. So training is, it's really a select, it's not really training. It's really just a selection process. Mm. It's 6 months long and it took me a short 13 months to make it through that 6 month block of training. Because I got injured several times. I got rolled back. I had to start over from the beginning. There are milestones along the way. Hell week is one of those milestones. It's week number 5. It's 5.5 days. You're cold, you're wet, you're miserable. 70% of the people quit from the day 1 to hell week. And then during hell week, 70% of those people that are left quit.
Wow.
70 to 80% of those people actually quit during hell week. I remember going through hell week and, you know, at some point I looked up and I was like, where did everybody go? Like, I didn't see them quit. They were just gone. I saw guys quit in the beginning, but one of the things during hell week, and this goes back to who you surround yourself with, is I was in boat crew 4 and we had guys that were weak. We had guys that didn't want to like put forth the effort, that didn't want to like really be there. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I'm out of here. I'm going to quit. I don't want to do this anymore. And I'm like, beat it. I've been here for like 9 months and I finally get to do this. Yeah. Like, I've been looking forward to this for a long time, for years and years and years. And I finally get to be here. You need to go away. And other guys that have, you know, they'd only been in training for like, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks. They're like, no, stick around. Don't quit. Keep going.
You're like, nah, just go.
And I'm like, get out. So I'm watching one boat crew win all of the races. So we start Sunday night and I'm watching this one boat crew 3 win all these races. And I'm like, I want to be in that boat crew. Mm. I want to be surrounded by winners. Mm. And we continue on. It's Monday afternoon, just before dinner. We've lost enough people that they need to reshuffle the boat crews. Mm. So the way that boat crews are set up, they're based on your height. So boat crew 1 is all the tall guys. Boat crew 2 is the next tallest. 3 is the next tallest. So you line up in a height line. And I was like, okay, I waited for everyone to line up. And I was like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's boat crew 1. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm number 5. If I'm not quite tall enough, I just pile a little sand under my feet to make sure that I'm tall enough. And I'm in boat crew 3. Yeah. And when I got into boat crew 3, what I noticed is there were no superstars there. Mm. Everyone was regular. Everyone was average. Mm. But what everyone had was this tremendous heart, this tremendous drive to win. And I think this is actually what I was thinking about earlier. It wasn't that we were the most talented.
Mm.
And no one talked about it in the boat crew. Mm. No one talked about it. But we all ended up, I would feel sorry for myself at some point and I would want to slow down. My stomach hurt, my legs hurt, I'm limping along. I wanted to slow down. But if I slow down, I would be letting those guys down. Yeah. Now they're dragging me. I can't let that happen. Mm-hmm. So I had to push through that pain. They actually made me better. They brought me up to their level. Yeah. And I know at some point, every one of those guys were suffering and they thought exactly the same thing. We won every single race throughout the rest of Hell Week. And it came all the way down to the Thursday. So Friday, Hell Week, Friday night, Hell Week ends. Thursday night is this big thing. You paddle around Coronado Island. It's a whole big deal. And everything is a race. Mm-hmm. So you get in the boat, you paddle out to sea, you go in, you go down the beach, you come back in. What boat crew is this? Boat crew 3. Go sit down. Then other boat crews would come in. We'd do another race. What boat crew is this? Boat crew 3. Pretty soon the instructors were like, wait a minute, why is boat crew 3 winning? There's nobody in that boat crew. They're not supposed to win. Boat crew 1, the big guys, big strong guys, they're supposed to win.
Mm.
We fucking destroyed them. Because no one expected us to, but number 2, we held ourselves to such a high level. It didn't matter if we were going to go eat, or we're going to like do a race. We might start at the back of the line of all these boats that we're carrying around on our heads. We might start at the back. It didn't matter. By the time we got to the chow hall, we were in the front. If there was the smallest gap between the boat that was in front of us, we passed them and pushed them back out of the way. And we did that every single day, all week, every day, every hour. And it was because we were surrounded by guys. I tell people this sometimes. I say, you have two choices in Buds. You can quit or you can keep going. That's number one. Option number two is if you decide to keep going, you can be mediocre or you can be fucking awesome. Are you going to be mediocre or are you going to be fucking awesome? I choose to be fucking awesome. But it's because I'm surrounding myself with the right people. And sometimes, now that I'm out, sometimes I have to pay to be in the room with the right people.
Yeah.
And then I make the decision if I want them on my team or not. They make the decision if they want me on their team. And I put myself into some rooms with some big people, and they've decided that they want me on their team. And I'm like, let's go. Let's fucking crush some shit.
So the reason why I came to America was James just networked with me, and I'm like, well, this is an opportunity for me to be in the room.
Yes.
Of people like yourself, which I'm coming to your mastermind tomorrow. Are you talking tomorrow?
I am talking tomorrow.
Yes. So I'll be there tomorrow. But coming back to what you said, there was that beautiful story where I felt the same, wasn't the best, but I decided to become disciplined and be around the people that are going to support me to be extraordinary. So there was this beautiful sort of crossover that you just explained where you saw what mediocre was like. You saw also what the opposite of that was like, where there were people that may not have been the best, but you found the people that you were there in that little boat, that group three, which, by the way, that's my like favorite number. And from that, you sunk into your heart. You stayed out of that egotistical of like, I'm the best, I'm the winner. But you actually found this beautiful surrounding of people that brought you to be the best version, but also you were able to like mold and support one another when the other person was down. Does that seem to be a common theme in life that people sort of portray, where they either give up too soon or they're not around the right people to support them when they are down?
I think yes. Yes and yes. I think most people don't know what it's like to win. And kind of going back to Book Crew 3, and I just thought of this right now, is even though we won every single race,
congrats,
no one noticed it. No one noticed it until the end.
Really?
They were winning races from Sunday night all the way through till I got in the boat crew Monday night, all the way through till Thursday night was the first time the instructors really noticed that Boat Crew 3 was winning every single race. We knew we were winning every single race. We did not look for recognition. We didn't look for anything. We looked for the next race to win. That is a lesson that we have to learn ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, just because you're fucking crushing it doesn't mean anyone's going to pay attention to you.
Yeah.
You just have to keep going and keep winning and keep doing the work, showing up for yourself every single day. You know, there's a saying that Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, Rome was built every fucking day until it became an empire. And then it kept being built after that. When we become that empire and then we become mediocre, we become lackadaisical. We're like, this is good enough. Every failure that I've had in my life has been when I'm like, I'm comfortable, I'm okay, I'm on top, I'm whatever. Every time I've had that thought, I've had massive failure, whether it was in leadership and career, in whatever it was. The times when I have been ultimately successful are the times where I've been extremely uncomfortable. I can't do enough. I'm continually working. I'm continually grinding, continually trying to win, continually trying to get to the front. Those are the times where I've been successful.
But also what you said before, allowing yourself to not have to need to be validated by other people.
Correct.
Right? And I think that a lot of people do sort of fall into that trap. It's like, I need to be recognized for what I do. And then they put too much energy into that. And then they end up going backwards.
Correct.
Which is really fascinating that you brought up. So many beautiful parts are coming up for me. So I really love that you're bringing in the mediocrity, building your empire. Before we dive into
wait till tomorrow, I'm gonna give you a whole lot more.
You gotta slam it in. Yeah. I say. Obviously, there were a lot of hardships that happened in Navy SEAL.
Sure.
What was your most like, fuck, the most horrible point where you were like, how the fuck am I going to get out of it? And how did you?
The hardest part is losing guys in combat. There have been times where, you know, we would go out for a few hours and we would still be out for weeks later. That's a hard thing. You like, you leave thinking I'm going to come back and I'm going to sleep in my own sleeping bag or my own little room, on the base. Oh, I'm sleeping on the ground out here in some place where people are trying to take my life. Maybe we'll get back tomorrow or the next day. Maybe we'll get back next week. We're still out here doing work. We've got work to do. We just have to like put our head down. Stop worrying about the gratification at the end. Stop worrying about when this is going to end. Just keep going forward until we're done. Mm. Like we don't know when it's going to end. We just have to keep going until we get there. Mm. And then when we're done and we get back, okay, now you can relax and get ready for the next time where it's not going to go according to plan because it never goes according to plan. You can plan. You have to have a plan. And again, we'll talk about this more tomorrow. You have to have a plan.
Everyone's and I'm like, tell me now.
And I'm going to tell you how to do that in business and life and everything else. But you have to have a plan because a plan is something that gives you a framework to deviate from. Mm. It'll be your guiding light. Like the way you execute may not be the way that you planned, but you know what your end result is. So you at least have a path, you have a map, you have something, a North Star to kind of get you there. I'm giving a whole lot of stuff that I'm going to talk about tomorrow away
right now. I know, and I'm trying to get away from that.
I'm only going to give you like some wave tops today. So
not fair. Do you ever relax there when you're in the Navy SEAL? Because you said before, once you feel safe, then you can relax.
Sure. I mean, because we work in cycles.
Yeah.
You know, the SEAL teams are a little bit different than the other special forces. We'll do 18 months of getting ready to deploy to a 6 or 10 month deployment. Mm. And so what we do is we come back, we focus on the basics. We go get some professional development, go to sniper school, go to breacher school, go learn how to, you know, supervise diving operations or throw guys out of airplanes. And then we come back and we do a very detailed workup where we, again, we start from the very most basic. We could be doing like covering, like clearing city blocks overseas. But when we come back and we start at the very basics of like 2 men walking into a room and how to clear it. And then 4 and then 8 and 10. And then we go from, you know, no rounds to paint rounds. And then we go from paint rounds to live bullets. And everything is about safety. Everything is about focusing on the basics, because if you can't master the basics, everyone wants to add complexity to everything they do.
You know, it's funny.
I don't know why, but if you can't, and they forget about the basics. I need to do the fancy thing. Fuck the fancy thing. Focus on the basics. No one will be able to stop you ever.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go for it.
It's just funny. Every person I've had today has always brought it back to simplicity and being like having the basics in line. So it's beautiful that you brought that in.
Yeah.
You left the Navy SEAL.
Yes.
Why?
My time was up.
Yeah.
They only let you stay in the military for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Based on your rank and what you're doing.
Yeah. Because you were a sniper.
I was a sniper. I became a sniper instructor later on. And, but when I was, as I advanced in rank, I did the sniper role less and I did more leadership roles.
Yeah.
So I learned leadership mostly through failure. You know, being a sniper instructor, I ran the sniper course. And again, I was in charge and I had guys that were more senior to me working for me. Right. I had guys more senior to me going through the course. And so that can be a mind fuck because you have this military rank structure, the senior guys are, you know, but we also have this works in the corporate world and entrepreneurial world, whatever. You know, we respect the position. Mm. It's not always about the rank. It's about the position. Like who's earned that position? I earned that position. I don't know if I wanted the position, but I was given to it based on what my skill sets were. And so the leadership said, okay, you're running this. okay, I'm going to figure it out. But again, it was always being put into those uncomfortable positions is where I thrived, where I did a really good job, because I never knew what good enough was. And there was no way I was going to be good enough. I always thought I was like just clawing and scratching to just like keep my head above water. And that was always, the thing that created success in my life. Mm-hmm. Every time I was, this is good enough, I kind of had that mediocre mindset. Massive failure.
Yeah. I am going back to how you were broke, you know, I was homeless too. So I really connect with you on that too. So I get from a perseverance survival mechanism, but also more, not survival mechanism, but almost like life was about a survival game for myself.
Sure.
But I loved that you brought up, was I even good enough in positions where, you know, other people were older than you, more senior than you, but they obviously put you in the position you're in because there was something in you. You sure. had drive. You believed in yourself and you were committed to it. And I find a lot of people these days when they're building their business or even just entrepreneurs these days, or leaders, or say that they are leaders,
right.
they don't understand the level of discomfort they have to go in. They're not committed in themselves. And they don't have the heart, is what you said too.
Yeah.
And I really want to bring this forward because I feel like the next question is important. When you found yourself comfortable, was it when you left the Navy?
No, that was the most uncomfortable I've ever been.
Wow. Tell me more.
I say that my transition from the SEAL teams, from the military to civilian life, is the hardest military mission I've ever been on. And I'm still on that mission today. In the military, you have people that are in front of you. There's a path. It's a clear path. If you want to be successful, they're going to give you the path. And you just have to do the work. In this weird entrepreneurial world, let me back up. I'm not a 9-to-5 kind of guy.
You, me neither.
I've spent enough time in cubicles, even in the military, like, because you have to go do these admin jobs and then you go back to the teams and it's just part of the process because they're trying to make you more well-rounded. Mm. I hate sitting in a cubicle. I hate that stuff. I could go sit in a cubicle right now and make $150,000 a year, doing nothing really. Mm. That doesn't drive me. That doesn't make me happy. That does not fulfill me in any capacity whatsoever. So I will never do that job. My first job, my first business I started when I retired, I fell on my face. Massive failure.
Really?
I thought I was good enough. I thought I would be successful. And I couldn't be more grateful for that failure. Had I been successful in that first venture out the gate, then I wouldn't be the man I am today. I wouldn't have the mindset I have today. I wouldn't be creating the impact that I'm creating today. Because I wouldn't have had the struggles that I had to go through to figure out who the fuck I am. I've been on over, in the last 2.5 years, I've been on over 450 podcasts. And it was some of that that helped me figure out who I am. Like, what is my story? I didn't know my story. Mm. I was afraid to, I had massive imposter syndrome. Mm. You see me and you're like, oh, you see my resume or whatever. And you're like, oh, you did all these things. And I'm like, I'm just a regular guy. Mm. I don't feel like I've done anything. I have so much more to do, so much more to accomplish. It's funny, all the things I do today are all the things I said I would never do.
Like what?
I'll never be in sales. I was selling stuff in the, you know, it, while in the SEAL teams, you're selling the mission.
Mm.
But I didn't really put all that together until much later on.
It's your interpretation of it.
Yeah. Right. Like sales is sleazy and ugly and whatever. Yeah. It's not. Like you have a product, you have a service, you have a thing that's going to make people's lives better.
Love that.
Go sell it. Get it in front of as many people as possible. How do you make $1 million? Go impact 1 million lives. Mm. Ready to go. Mm. Piece of cake. I'm never going to be one of those life coaches or whatever the hell that is. I don't even know what that means. I didn't know who Tony Robbins was until I retired.
Yeah, wow.
So I lived in somewhat of a bubble. So now I call it business coaching, leadership coaching, whatever. consulting, whatever the word you like. Some people are like, what's a coach? What's it? What it like? I don't know. It's overused or something. I help people with leadership. I help people with business. I help people with mindset. And I'm never going to be one of those guys standing on a stage, like motivationally speaking or anything like
that.
I'm going to do that tomorrow. I did that a week and a half ago to 800 people. Cool. And you know, when I was on that stage a week and a half ago, I started off by saying 4 years and 22 days ago, I was sitting right where you're sitting today. Mm. I had no mission. I had no purpose and I had no team. And I watched my friends get on that stage and deliver amazing messages. And then I watched them deliver messages from a stage that I barely felt worthy of being in the room where they were. And then that day, a week and a half ago, when I walked on the stage, I talked about that and I said, and today I stand on the stage that I felt unworthy to even be in the room of, and I fucking own this stage. I fucking own this. And there's no one, not one motherfucker out there that can take it away from me. Mm. And so that was still not as big of a crowd that I want to be in front of. I want to be in front of 5,000-10,000 people and deliver my message. But had I been successful in that first venture out the gate, I wouldn't have the message that I have today, a message that I'm going to deliver to you guys tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'll deliver a lot of stuff for you guys tomorrow.
You failed when you got out.
Failure is a fucking superpower. Like, you got to be, you know, I did a podcast with someone else right before this, and you know, I said, you know, one of the things is you can't be afraid to suck.
Mm.
You can't be afraid of failure.
Mm.
It's okay to suck. Mm. We all suck. Every black belt in every martial art ever created all started as a white belt. Mm. They all started by sucking. And then over time and failure, they got better. And repetition, they got better. Mm. We all have to, it's okay to suck. It's okay to have failure. Embrace that failure. Learn from it. Use that failure and all the lessons along the way as your foundation to build your fucking empire.
I love your fucking energy, by the way. it's so nice to have someone like this in the room with the same sort of like vibe. And so thank you for sharing about fear of failure, because I think a lot of people, as you said, don't want to embrace it. I'm the type of person where when I do fail, I'm like, yes, this is feedback for me. But coming back to mission that you had in Navy, now stepping out of the Navy world, you went through some hardships, dived into more uncomfortable situations. What were some of those things that you went through and that you're working on right now?
I think I talked about imposter syndrome earlier. I still struggle with it.
So do I.
I believe I only work with high performers.
Mm.
Every one of my clients who is a high performer, every single one of them struggles with some kind of imposter syndrome. And so what I realized, and this is like has been very eye-opening for many of them, is I asked them one simple question. Do you know who doesn't have imposter syndrome?
Mm-hmm.
Imposters. And they're like, holy shit. I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see someone out there who their shit doesn't stink and they're the fucking man or the fucking woman or whatever, chances are they're either an imposter or they're doing a really good job of working through their imposter syndrome. So just think about that when you see people, they're either an imposter or they've done a lot of work to work through that imposter syndrome. Like, I try not to show it, but I do talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, I want to deliver fucking energy and message and like motivate people and inspire them and like entertain if I can entertain. But I still have self-doubt. Like, I felt unworthy to be in the fucking room that the stage was on. Now I fucking own the stage. 5 minutes before I walked on that stage, I got to get out of my own head and fucking own it.
Hey, beautiful kings and queens. Are you right now in a space where you're ready to take action and build your business, yet you struggle where to begin? You're feeling stuck and overwhelmed with all the things you need to do when it comes to building a business. build the business of your dreams in the online space and be in the arena of all the incredible, great humans out there that are building 7 to 8 figure businesses. Now, the foundations that I truly believe in that you are going to learn through this membership is sales, marketing, content creation, social media, money mindset, and of course, branding. Now, all of this will be accessible for you to be learning what is currently hot right now in the market and how you can create your own business and build a successful business in the online space. All you have to do right now is DM Empire in my Instagram or email myself and my team, and we will get the ball rolling so you can have your empire and start making moves in the online space.
Can I be transparent with you?
Please.
I was feeling self-doubt coming to America.
Sure.
Yeah. And I want to share that because I think it's important people perceive that we as high achievers don't feel these things. But I feel like the more we can share that and be vulnerable about that and be relatable, I think it allows other people to accept it too. But also more importantly, it was that discomfort that I just felt, well, what if they will like me? What if I have this amazing opportunity to speak with you today? And this has been amazing. You know, it's all those things that I was having self-doubt of coming here. So thank you for bringing that up, because I find entrepreneurs, people who want to build their businesses, build their empires, they either don't have that resilience, but also understanding. And the other part of that is they don't understand what leadership is. So you are someone that obviously works with people to help them with leadership. What are your key beliefs around that?
Before I go into leadership, I will come back to leadership, but I just wanted to kind of follow up with sort of the imposter syndrome thing. It happened to me last week. I was hired by a group of, and I didn't even know who all was going to be there, but it was a group of 9 men, and they're all 7, 8, 9 figure entrepreneurs. They're very successful. I knew what I was going to give or train. I've given pieces of it, working with different coaches, different programs, different whatever. This was the first time I was running my own event for these men by myself. I wasn't doing it under anyone else's umbrella other than my own. And so I felt pretty good about it until those guys rolled in. And there were some yoked motherfuckers in there. And I was like, and I'm not in bad shape. I'm in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
And I was like it started to take over, that imposter syndrome, and I had to fucking own it. I had to be like, nope, fuck that. This is my world. This is my stage. This is my event. I'm here to serve. I'm here to give. I'm here to provide tremendous value. I had to get that right in my mind, but I had to go through many different evolutions of failure and failure and failure and do it right and do it wrong and do it wrong and do it right in order to be able to combat that imposter syndrome that almost took me over.
Yeah.
But I had to fail a bunch of times before I got there. I had to do the self-work. I had to do the deep work. Just because you see something on a resume doesn't mean that I'm going to be like what you expect. I want to be better than what you expect. I want to over-deliver, but I have to do that work in the first place.
Yeah.
And so that comes back to leadership. Most people, and this kind of goes back to something we were talking about earlier, people think that you're, because of their position, the boss, they're a leader.
Interesting.
Most of the time, those are the worst leaders because they don't know how to lead. Oftentimes, those people don't even know how to lead themselves. Before you can lead anyone else, you have to learn how to lead yourself. I tell leaders all the time, learn how to follow before you learn how to lead. Learn how to take orders. Learn how to have other people tell you what to do. Figure out what you like and what you don't like. You don't like people just like yelling at you, telling you to go do something, and you don't want someone telling you what to do and not being kind about it.
Yeah.
You want clear and concise expectations of what the deliverable is, and then you go and deliver it to the best of your ability, right? Right. Okay, so why are you just like upset with people when you're not giving them clear guidance? Like, learn to lead yourself. Like, be the example. Show up before everyone else. Leave after everyone else. if you're Alf, like on vacation, on holiday, you know, expecting everyone to do the things that they're supposed to do, and you've taken more holidays than anyone else because you're the boss, it's your company, why do you expect them to work harder than you? You as a leader should actually be doing more work. You should be setting the example. You should be leading from the front. You should be leading by example. You should be start by leading yourself. When you start leading yourself, people will notice, and then they will start leading you. They will start following you. You won't even have to ask them.
This just came up because I have a team, and at the start of my company, I remember I was very much not a leader. I blamed.
I was the same.
Oh, and I reflect on it now, and I'm so grateful that they're still around, because I realized everything that I was blaming them for was a projection of me. And I know you understand that from that deep work that we've had to fucking do with life and the missions we've been on. I have this belief that leadership is communication, honesty, responsibility, being vulnerable, and showing up. Do any of those resonate?
Every single one of them.
Yeah.
Every single one. So you see my shirt, it says get naked.
I've been meaning to ask you that.
I told you, I have a message. I will not let you let you forget. And what Get Naked originally started off as was about taking that ego that I was carrying around, take that baggage that I was carrying around, take that armor that I was hiding behind, take that off, set it in the corner. Be vulnerable. It's not until you expose yourself and you become vulnerable that you can find the healing that you actually need. If you're hiding behind this thing, no one's actually going to take you seriously. One of the hardest things as a leader or as a man or as a woman or as a high performer, hardest thing as a high performer is to ask for help.
Yep.
That was the thing, I think, that, and I, you know, I've never wanted to ask for help. I always thought that was a sign of weakness. Always. I still struggle with it, but I have done enough work where I go and I actually ask people for help. And I just remember the name of the app. So there was an app called Clubhouse. I don't know if you guys had it in Australia. It was a it was a social media app.
Everyone got on it.
And it was like launched right as COVID happened. It was like, you know, like live podcast Q&A, whatever. And I'm trying to like figure out like who I am, my brand, what am I doing, how to sell CBD products or whatever it is. And people like get on Clubhouse and start talking about it and all this other stuff. And I was also trying to work on being vulnerable, and I was starting to work on getting on podcasts. Okay. And, you know, I got into this room and there was a shrink in there. I don't know, psychologist, psychiatrist, whatever, in that space. And I'm trying to work on being vulnerable. And so I said, yeah, you know, I have a really hard time asking for help. Like, I don't like asking for help. I can figure out myself. And so she said, well, how do you feel when other people ask you for help? And then you're able to deliver that help that they need. I said, I feel fucking amazing. I love helping people. Like it's one of, like, it drives me. It makes me want to be better. And so she said, well, so why are you robbing that same joy from someone else? Why are you stealing that same joy from someone else? And I was like, I can't talk to you anymore because you hurt my feelings.
You shut me down.
Right. And so I thought I was doing such a good job of trying to be vulnerable. And she was like, she punched me right in the gut. But it's a lesson that I had, that it was super valuable for me to learn.
Lead first.
I don't like being vulnerable, but I know it's necessary. I don't like asking for help, but I know it's necessary. Number one, to get me where I need to go faster. Number two, I'm providing joy to someone else because they were able to help me. Like by asking for help, I made the world a better place.
Now run me through Get Naked, because you're the co-founder of this. This is a CBD product.
So Naked Warrior. So there's a couple things. So Naked Warrior Recovery is the CBD brand, supplements brand that I started. CBD, it's a molecule that comes from the cannabis plant or the hemp plant in America. CBD became legal in 2019, only if it's derived from hemp. Hemp and marijuana are the same plant.
Mm.
The difference between the two, or according to the law, is the dried weight of the cannabis plant has to have 0.3% or less THC in it. That's what makes it hemp. Anything more than that is marijuana. So CBD is, you can pull it from the marijuana plant, but generally to be legal, it's derived from the hemp plant.
Yeah.
And it's a molecule that helps people with stress, anxiety, sleep, pain, all sorts of other things, childhood epilepsy, a lot of different modalities. And so I had heard about CBD before I got out of the military. I wasn't going to try it because I still maintained my top secret clearance. I didn't want to, like, you know, that's a great way to lose your, you know, to lose your job in the military is to use drugs.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to try it. But when I retired, there was a very good campaign when I was a kid of, like, you know, anti-drug campaign. And so they said, this is, you know, that's, you know, bad. They would have this skillet on a stove and, like, this is drugs. And they would crack an egg and this is your brain on drugs. And it's like cooking the egg. And so I've had that in my brain, you know, drugs are bad. Okay. This is not that. This is something very different. It's medicinal. It's all this other stuff. But I wasn't going to try it. Being in the military, when I retired, it still took me a year to try it for the first time.
Yeah.
So when I tried it, what I found is it helped to turn down the noise in my head. So I like to say that water boils at 212 degrees. I was probably living my life at 210 degrees and I didn't even know it. And it wasn't until I was taking CBD that I went from like 210 to 205 to 200 to 195, 190, maybe 185. I still didn't even realize that until I stopped taking it and I started getting closer to that boiling point again.
Wow.
And I was like, why are things that weren't bothering me a few weeks ago bothering me now? And I was like, maybe it was that CBD thing. Let me try a different brand. I had very similar results. And I was like, I think I want to be part of this industry. Maybe this is my new mission, my new purpose, and I need to build a new team. And because when I left the military, that I felt I lost that mission, purpose, and team. And I met a girl at an event that was putting CBD into kinesiology tape. And I was like, I tracked her down and I was like a little bit of a stalker. it was at that one event, that first event where I was like, I don't deserve to be in this room with all these successful entrepreneur, whatever people. And I was like, hey, you're the CBD girl, right? I want to do CBD. She was like, you want to do A to B, B to B, or B to C? I was like, I don't know what those letters mean. I want to do C, B, D. And so she was like, okay, well, why don't you just start your own CBD company? And I said, I don't know how to do that. And she leaned in and she said, you are a Navy SEAL. You can figure it out. So I politely asked her for my man card back, first of all. Put that in my pocket. I'm not getting that up again. That was too easy.
Yeah, therapist at
least. Right. Yes. I'm like, this is terrible. This sucks. And so I found out that it's a dirty industry. I wanted to focus on like having the highest quality product. And so that's where Naked Warrior Recovery came from. From there, I came up with the Get Naked mindset. I was actually terrified to act. I'm like, maybe that's too risque. I don't know. Maybe people will.
We all take risks here.
And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just roll with it. So then, you know, again, I hire coaches. I have lots of coaches. And then I was, you know, in one of the masterminds, and one of my coaches said, everyone here needs to have a signature presentation. Okay. What's that? Oh, it's something that you're an expert in that you can deliver in a 15 minute block of time or in a 90 minute block of time. Doesn't matter what it is, just something you're an expert in. And I was like, fuck, I don't have no idea. I was a Navy SEAL, maybe mindset, maybe leadership, maybe some other stuff. Let me think about that.
Yeah.
And so what I did is I turned NAKED into an acronym. So I talk about the Get Naked mindset. And so you'll hear this tomorrow. I'll give you the wave tops today.
I get the juicy stuff.
You get the good stuff. Because we're talking about thinking like a Navy SEAL, it's 5 secrets to help you think like a Navy SEAL. So if you want to think like a Navy SEAL, you have to get naked. That's how I start.
Yep. Love
the presentation. So the N stands for never quit. The A is accept failure. Mm. The K is to kill mediocrity. The E is expose your fears, and the D is do the work. And you have to do it every single day. And once you do it every day, you make that a part of your mindset. Once you start using the Get Naked mindset, nothing can stop you. You are fucking unstoppable. Mm-hmm. The end.
Fucking love that. And I feel like as well, can we just talk about how you had to find that expert in your field? It was always within you.
Sure. It was there, but I didn't know how to find it. I only found it through struggle, through failure, through continuing to, like, you know, climb. We all feel like we deserve praise at some point. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, like, you know, Boat Crew 3, we won every single race and no one noticed. We noticed, no one else noticed. It didn't matter. We just kept winning. Eventually someone's going to notice. I continued to fail and struggle. And I didn't really notice that I was winning until people started pointing it out to me. Like, oh, you're doing a fucking great job. Keep doing that. Like, I see you everywhere. You're like, I'm very easy to Google now. I had zero presence on the internet, zero, based on my last occupation. Today, if you Google my name, 450 podcasts, I pop up, like, I'm in there somewhere, easy to find. I have my own podcast now, which, again,
can I be on it, or is it just for men?
Right now it's just me, but yeah. Yes, I'm happy to bring you on when I'm ready for that. Right now it's just me. I'm still figuring it out. Yeah. You know, again, imposter syndrome. It's very difficult to talk to the camera and deliver a message and be very choreographed and want to do that. It's very hard. Like, it's one of the hardest things that I do. My hack is to, like, I have my computer screen and I have my camera, like, right there above it, so I can see my little face right there. So yeah. I'm looking at the camera almost. But I've done so many Zoom calls. Yeah. I like looking at myself and seeing what I look like, and that makes me comfortable. Maybe it's egotistical. I don't know. I don't care either.
No, that's why I was fucking shitting myself with this. I'm like, I have nothing. Yeah.
But like, it's much easier. Like, if I take my phone and I'm like, blah, 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 I can see myself. I'm not going to use this side of the camera. I want to use this side. So I know I'm in frame. I can see myself. I'm talking. And so I found ways to be successful at that. I'm still building my podcast. It's called The Navy SEAL Mindset. But I'm working on it. And, you know, some of it is like the challenge of thinking of things to just have, just to put out in the world. Mm. What value do you want to, this is very easy for me. Yeah. You ask me a question, you give me a direction, and I can fucking run.
Yeah.
For me to just sit there solo with my own thoughts and my own imposter syndrome and my own fucking whatever and be like, looking at the camera.
I actually feel like you would be amazing at it.
I have no idea what to say right now. You know what I mean?
I promise you, you'll get that.
I have to prepare, and then I can deliver. But it comes out of the preparation has to happen.
But you know what? I really value that, because, for example, I came here prepared with all my guest speakers, did research on all of them, had notes, and I was watching what James Whittaker did on his podcast and whatnot. And I'm like, oh, should I hold an iPad? I'm so used to having frameworks.
Sure.
And then from there, I kind of then create sort of like the beginning, middle, and end. And so for this sort of experience, they're very different for me, because I'm used to cameras,
right,
Zoom, seeing the notes and framework. So this is why I was saying to you before, the self-doubt was creeping in. What if I fuck up? What if I get his name wrong? Or, you know, what if I, you know, don't ask the right question? What if they don't like me?
I'm just going to correct you right there on the spot when you mess up my name.
Oh, good. Okay, I said that before. Like, what have I done now? But again, like, I think, coming back to ownership, what you said before, and being truthful to your audience, but also to the people you're surrounding yourself with and who you want to work with, I think that creates a lot of relatability. Like, I came here being complete transparent to you, and it's brought up so much beautiful moments and communication. And I'm so grateful I've got you on the podcast. Coming back to Get Naked, I know I go into like loops.
It's all good. That's how I go. Clearly, we're like, oh, let me come back to this, and we'll come back to it.
You obviously started the CBD from something that you were suppressing. Is that right?
Well, it was a modality that helped me. Mm-hmm. I'd heard people talk about it. Oh, it's great. It's whatever. It helps with stress, anxiety, sleep, pain, all that stuff. And I was struggling with a whole lot of stuff. Mm. I don't say that I have PTSD in any capacity. I say I have baggage. Mm. We all have baggage. Mm. Every single one. There's nobody in this world that doesn't have baggage. Mm. It's what we do with the baggage. Do we continue to carry it around? Do we continue to fill that bag full of more shit? Mm. Or do we take it off? Or do we take a bunch of shit out of that bag? Maybe we still have to carry some stuff around. That's okay. Carry as little of that shit as you can. Mm. CBD was just a modality that helped me turn down the noise in my head, help me have more positive self-talk, because we have more negative self-talk during the day than we do positive self-talk. And if we succumb to that negative self-talk, we can just go down, spiral down very, very quickly. There's a guy that's going to be in the event tomorrow. I had lunch with him right before this.
Who was it?
His name is Tim.
Oh, am I allowed to know?
I'm going to talk about him because I told him that I've talked about him on other podcasts, yeah. And I talked about him on the one a little bit earlier. So Tim has done some video work for me in the past. I've been on his podcast twice. He asked me some really great hard questions, and I really appreciated that. And then about a year ago, a little over a year ago, his dad died. They were expecting it, but it just happened suddenly. And Tim went into like super depression, and he just spiraled down. And when he started coming back out of it, he reached out to me. He's like, "Hey, mate," because you know Australia and stuff. We say mate down there.
He's Tim Australian.
Yeah, he is. I just want to like reach out to let you know. I know I've been off the radar. We haven't communicated with you in a long time. I've had some issues. My dad died. I'd like to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, awesome. Here's my calendar link. Let's get on a call and let's talk about it. He said something to me that was very profound and very impactful that I had never really considered. I've experienced my own versions of this, but I didn't really consider it. And he said the depression was very comfortable. I was very comfortable in that depression. And I was like, that's interesting because I know exactly what you're talking about. It's very easy to be like, to fall, like once you do this downward spiral, it's very hard to pull out of that and to like start, you know, pull the nose of the plane back up. He didn't crash and burn. He was able to pull it out, but he flew at a very low level, but he was very comfortable in that depression. And it wasn't until he started doing things purposefully. Like he said his uncle, he was in the army. He was like, "Tim, you're getting married in like 2 months. You need to get your shit together. Like, I don't care what you do, but every day I want you to wake up at the same time. I don't care if it's at noon. Wake up at the same time and go for a walk. Take your fucking dog for a walk." And so Tim's like, "Okay, I'll get up at whatever, 10 o'clock. And so every day he would get up at 10 and he would take his dog has got to go for a walk. And then he's like, things started getting better, but he was ready to come out of that.
Yeah.
Because he let himself become comfortable with those negative self-talks and like, I don't need to do anything. So CBD was just something that helped me turn down the noise, my negative self-talk, so I could have more positive self-talk. Then I could start. So I started reading, I started listening to podcasts. I started to like improve myself. I knew I wanted to be better. I just didn't know what it was. I had no plan. I thought I did. I thought I had a plan. I fucking failed miserably. Now I will never be okay with, nothing will ever be good enough for me. I'm on this fucking trajectory. I want to speak to more bigger crowds, more people, more impact, create more podcasts, sell more stuff, coach more people, just fucking provide fucking massive impact to the world. That's what I want to do. That's my mission. But I had to go through massive failure and massive negative self-talk and all sorts of other shit before I could get where I am here today.
I'm bringing this up because I think it's really important for the listeners to hear this. You started off as an identity, as the Navy SEAL. You then transitioned into a new identity. And I think this is just a beautiful message for people who feel like when they've just been known as one thing and they walk away from that. I know you said that you're still part of the Navy SEAL, but you've just expanded yourself.
Right.
You're not just this one thing now. You're a speaker. You're doing podcasts. You're coaching people. You're a business person. Business coach. You are showing people that there is so many other options that you have. And what for the listeners who may be feeling they don't know how to begin, you know, transitioning from one thing to another where they feel lost, comfortable in that depressive state, what was the first step for you to then go into that expansive place?
First step was to be brave enough to ask for help. That's really the hardest thing, is like being brave enough to ask for help. But after that, I had to make a plan, and how I got here was not linear. It was not a straight line. There was lots of highs and lows and lots of failure along the way. Again, it took me a long time to, the first two times I spoke in front of a crowd, They were small. Like, I think the first one was like 20 people. The second one was maybe 60 people. And I started both times saying, I'm more comfortable in a gunfight than I am speaking in front of people. Mm. I still said that until very recently.
Congrats.
Now, when I get on stage, I say, I fucking own this stage.
Yeah.
This is my fucking world and no one will ever take it away from me. But it was a long time to get there. I didn't consider myself a public speaker. Mm. I had a signature presentation that I wanted to practice. Now I'm a fucking speaker. Now I motivate the fuck out of people.
Mm.
I educate people. I entertain people. That's my job now. And so, originally, like, I started getting on podcasts to promote Naked Warrior Recovery, mm-hmm. the CBD company, because it's very hard to market that product in the United States or anywhere else.
Even in Australia?
I believe you have CBD in Australia. The customs piece of it is kind of a pain.
Yeah.
So I haven't, I looked into it once upon a time. I may look into it again.
Yeah. Let me know how I can help. My brother
sure.
takes it. We've gone through some stuff. So
awesome.
I'm all for it.
Yeah. Fantastic. That's fantastic. I love those stories.
Yeah.
But along the way, I don't know if it was like maybe a year ago, I have pivoted. So I don't try to promote Naked Warrior Recovery as much.
Mm.
I'm not trying to build that brand as much as I'm building my own brand.
Mm.
And so just on the, like, we'll just talk kind of the business side of it. I'm building my own personal brand because one of my coaches says, listen, people don't want to buy from businesses. People want to buy from people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have since pivoted. So now I'm building my brand. And as my brand grows, people will naturally buy from me. If they know me, they like me, they trust me, they resonate with me, and they want, CBD or some other supplement that's not CBD that I sell, more than likely they'll buy from me.
Yeah.
And so the same for you or anyone else who's out there listening, build your personal brand.
Mm.
Like, and be the baddest motherfucker on the planet in that brand.
I'm so glad we can fucking swear on this.
And
to bring that forward, because what I do for work is branding, marketing, content. And you're so fucking right. You know, me being here has supported my brand to grow. You being here too is going to support your brand to grow too. So I think a lot of people go over the strategy of building a business. But if they
right.
can grow themselves and they can find their unique story, that's
yes.
going to create such a trajectory as what you said before. And your mission is just so fucking amazing. King, I have two more questions. Is that okay?
I got all night.
I know. Did you see that spider falling down before?
I did. I was like, oh, we're just not going to...
That's so funny. So first,
I didn't let it distract me. I was distracted.
I was.
I saw you. It was awesome.
What does an empire look like for you? What does that mean?
An empire for me.
Mm.
I think I want to reframe the question. What I think, the way I understand the question.
My bad.
Is how will you know if you've created an impact in the world?
Mm.
I think there may be another way to frame it, but the answer that I want, I'm trying to reframe the question so I can give the answer I want to give,
yeah.
is that everyone on earth knows what the get naked mindset is. They know what it's all about and then they start living it.
Mm.
That's when I know I've made an impact.
Mm.
I know there are other people out there. I'm not going to say any names. That, they say, weird shit like stay hard, motherfucker.
Mm.
And people look up to them and they're like, oh, the motivational, whatever. I know what those people have done, what they did in the SEAL teams or whatever. I'm not, again, I'm sure you can read through what
mm-hmm,
I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I love the messaging. I love the motivation that comes out of it. I have a more powerful message. So they've built an empire.
Mm.
Mine is going to be bigger.
Mm, I fucking love that. It's coming back to authenticity, I feel, being your authentic self, because I feel, I don't know, that seems to be like, I feel like a very old school approach that people are doing, what you explained before with the Navy SEAL guys that you've just mentioned. I feel like that's very ego driven. Am I right in saying that?
I think we could talk about that. I have a lot of thoughts on that.
Well, I just believe the more true you are and the
yes.
more real you are and authentic, that is going to be read more rather
right.
than people. But then you were saying people buy into the fuck you, this is how it should be, da da da.
Well, I mean, when you talk about brand, that's a fucking great brand to look at and study.
Mm. But is it authentic?
I think it is because there's so much hate built in there.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hate, and I think that drives him.
Mm.
That's okay. That's part of his brand. Fucking go and like make a great impact in the world. Good.
I think I'm finally seeing.
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm, you know, if anyone wants to know, you can reach out to me and I'll give it to you.
Off camera.
I'll tell you who we're talking about. Because I just talked, you know, about it right outside before this. And when people mention his name, I'm like, who? And they're always shocked when I say, no, I don't know who they are. Mm. But it's amazing because he has an impact around the world.
Yeah.
I've been on I've talked to people in almost every fucking country. Everyone knows that name.
Mm.
One of the things that I'm on the bandwagon now, so I'm going to say it and then I'm going to move on. One of the things that I don't like about him and his brand is he says that no one did it other than him.
Mm.
That's bullshit. To get where he is today, there's a fucking massive team that got him there. Massive team. Like, he didn't do the things that he did, you know, prior to what he's doing now when he was his previous occupation, that we may have done something similar in that world. He didn't get through that program by himself. He didn't get through anything else that he's ever done by himself.
Mm.
He didn't write any books that he's written by himself. He didn't promote anything by himself. He's really good at branding himself, though.
Mm.
So use that as a, you don't have to, you can love him or hate him. I don't care. Doesn't impact me at all. If he motivates you, fuck yeah, go for it. If you're annoyed by it, like learn like what he's done on the branding side and use like his success as like as a blueprint.
Yeah.
You don't have to be like, I think he's authentic because he has so much fucking hate.
Yeah.
I think you're authentic because you wear everything that you preach, everything you talk about.
Thank you.
You walk around, you are your brand. I do the same thing. I struggle with it still. You know, when I talk about never quit, accept failure, kill mediocrity, expose your fears, do the work, I still find myself like, you're always going to see me wearing something that says get naked. Hat, shirt, socks, whatever.
It's coming back to the embodiment too.
Right. And when I get on stage, I don't care how big, whatever. Mm. I'm wearing jeans, flip-flops, and a t-shirt. I'm fucking authentic. And I've struggled with that. I've talked to lots of people and they're like, and I'm like, I don't know, should I wear a suit with a little trident and some other stuff? And I do sometimes, depending on the venue, depending on what they're paying me, whatever. But if I have the option to walk out there exactly the way that I'm dressed right now, okay, I'm going to do that because I want you to see my authentic self. But I didn't get there, kind of like I wasn't sure if I should use get naked or not.
Mm.
I was like, I don't know, maybe people will judge me. Tim Grover, who was Michael Jordan's coach.
Mm, I love his book, Relentless.
Yes, and Winning. Both of those books are fucking amazing.
Mm.
And one other thing that I got to speak at the same venue as Tim once.
Wow.
And I tried very hard not to be like a giggly little girl. Oh my God. It was like I saw, like I was flying from Canada where I did a speaking event back to California. And then I saw on the itinerary, like I'm speaking, some other people, Tim Grover. I was like, I was like, you know, like, oh my God, it was ridiculous. I was like, okay, get your shit under control. Don't be a little groupie, whatever. I got to spend a little bit of time with him. I was totally like, no big deal. You're just a man, whatever. What's that?
Did you get a photo?
I did.
Good.
Yeah. And actually a buddy of mine introduced me. And then the guy who was running the event, who I do some work for now, like, you know, that I paid to be in his circle. Now I'm on his team and we do some other stuff together. He was like, hey, come over here and like talk to Tim and whatever. I didn't tell him I wanted to. He just said, I want you guys to spend some time together. But one of the things that Tim talks about in his book is flexing your IDGAF muscle.
Mm.
Do you remember what the IDGAF stands
for? Is
that in
the Relentless?
I got you.
Please help me.
IDGAF stands for I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
So that's something that I've had to continue in my life. It doesn't matter if it's like a shitty relationship that I've been a part of, like, or some like fucking failures that I've had or whatever the thing is, thinking about how people are going to judge what I say, think, or do. That guy we were talking about earlier, he flexes his id gap muscle like a motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like when you want to get to the top and build your empire, you really need to hone in on that.
100%. That I don't give a fuck what anyone else thinks, yeah, says, or does.
Yeah.
You just be you authentically. Flex your id gap muscle. And so anytime I say that or think that or whatever, I'm sure he didn't come up with that himself. Like he's a very smart man. He's learned a lot of shit along the way. But like when I think about that, I always have to give him credit for flexing your id gap muscle. I'm always fucking flexing my id gap muscle.
I love Tim Grover. Yeah. Wow. I'm so glad you brought that up. When I was an athlete, I was reading that book because I was all about the athlete mentality. And I think it's the same in business, the same in healing,
100%.
The same in everything. How you do one thing is how you do everything. King, I want to finish this off as much as I want to keep talking. I'm going to see you tomorrow anyway with all the goodies. I always finish off with this question. And the question is, if you were to give that one key, which you know you have dropped so many fucking good keys today, but that one key of advice to the kings and queens listening that will give them the door that opens that opportunity of building their empire, what is that key?
Make bold adjustments. And let me qualify it.
I like that.
When I was teaching sniper school,
when
I would go back to the SEAL platoon and we would, you know, we would resight in weapons, maybe get a new weapon, new optics, new whatever. Guys would, you know, the bullseye is only 25 yards away. You get on paper, like at a close range, and then you move the target further out. Mm. Well, guys would, you would think that a bunch of Navy SEALs would know how to sight in their fucking weapon. That is a false assumption. Many do, but many do not. And so I would be running the range because I'm the sniper, I'm the expert, I'm that guy. And I would watch and I'm, you know, running the evolution, making sure everyone got on paper, got what they needed to before we moved to longer ranges. And I would watch guys. They would take three shots and they would make small adjustments to their optic. Make three more shots. Make small adjustments. Like my fucking scope is busted. This is busted. The gun's broken. It's not working properly. And so I would go up to them and I would say, can I see your gun for a second? And I would take it and I would adjust like this, like just over adjust. And they're like, what the fuck are you doing? You're going to break my shit. And I'm like, I understand. Just go ahead. Would do me a favor and like take three more shots. So what would happen is their impacts would move from the left side of the paper all the way across to about halfway to the right side of the paper, but they would be much closer to the bullseye. Then they could make these smaller, more minor adjustments, still kind of bold, but less bold to get back. Maybe they would overshoot and they would eventually come back to the, like find the bullseye that they were looking for. Mm-hmm. If they continued to make these small adjustments, we would still be out there on the range right now, fucking 6 years later, trying to get on target. Sometimes the right thing to do to build your empire, to get on paper, to hit that bullseye, is to make these bold adjustments. Sometimes it's to do the fucking opposite of what everyone tells you to do. So that key right there, I think, will open a lot of doors for a lot of people.
I have like a mic drop moment just there. That was fucking amazing, King. William, thank you so much for being on Keys to the Queendom. Where can everyone find you? How can we support you? This is one of the things I always want to end with the podcast is how can we support you?
I would say I'm gonna break rules. Everyone says send everyone to one place. I'm gonna send you to a couple of places.
All of it. anyway.
The big one I'm gonna say is if you want to learn more about how to think like a Navy SEAL, the Get Naked Mindset, go to fiveSEALSecrets.com. Put your information in there. Get the email. If you want to reach back out to me, that email comes from my email address. Just reply to it. Check your junk mail. And you know, let's have a conversation or just read that PDF that I'm going to send you and apply it to your life. If you want to follow me on Instagram, I'm william.r.branham. I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn and wherever else, you know,
Instagram.
That's where I spend most of my time. So I would say those are the two best places to connect with me and see whatever I talk about.
Thank you so much
for
everything.
Thank you for having me here.
Am I allowed to say that?
You can call me whatever you want.
And this is Keys to the Queendom here in Los Angeles, California. I'm your host, Tamara Meyer. See you later.